Hey everyone, if you like this podcast, go behind the paywall to get privileged access to the smartest minds in finance. Visit realvision.com/RVpod and use the promo code podcast10, that's podcast10, to get 10% off our essential membership for the first year. Join the Real Vision community and learn how to become a better investor. And now to the top analysis of today's markets.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. My name is Andreas Steno from Real Vision, and I look forward to sending live for you the next 30 minutes here on Tuesday, the 24th of January. And today we're going to ask the question whether narrative will end soon. And I'm joined by an equity bear today, and also probably the guy with the best hair in finance, Eric Johnston, the head of equity derivatives and cross asset strategy at Cantor Fitzgerald. It's good to see you on the show again, Eric.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here and appreciate the compliment.
Eric, we've had quite of a wobbly day in equity markets. We've had PMIs out of Europe and the US bouncing a little bit from lows, but still sideways to slightly negative price action, both in European equities and US equities. What do you make of the price action after the rally that we've seen so far this year?
So one of the things that's happening is that people are being somewhat dragged into this rally. So the CTA community, which I think is a really important driver and has been for years in a lot of the short-term moves that we get, has been in buy mode. So they have their momentum triggers. It trigger right now, we're about 1% or so above their medium-term trigger. And so they're buying approximately $2 to $3 billion a day. And right now, liquidity in the equity markets is extremely poor. So we're seeing volumes that are down, you know, 15 to 20% relative to the 100-day average. And even on the days on Friday and Monday, when we had those two big rallies where we saw, you know, very large moves in the market, which just, you know, creates trading going on in the futures market, volumes even then were still quite low, which just shows you at any point liquidity is very low. So when you have CTAs buying that much each day, and although buybacks are in, you know, some are in blackout right now, but many are still alive, and you add in that flow, it's creating this dynamic that is then dragging in hedge funds to cover shorts. It's dragging in mutual funds to reduce their some of their cash levels, which have been you know, very high, and so situation where people are buying not because they think that we're necessarily going higher, but because they feel like they have to, and they're being dragged into it. So I think we are in sort of the probably seventh inning to ninth inning of this trade. The crowded hedge fund short basket is up over 20% this year, and the momentum index is down very significantly this year. And, you know, a typical long short hedge fund is obviously short the crowded names and is typically long momentum, because you're typically long high quality and short low quality, and the low quality stocks are ripping. So you've had this one big pain trade squeeze that I think is driving things, and for that matter, also driving the narrative.
Yeah, before we went on air, Eric, we talked about how price tends to lead narrative in the mainstream media, at least. And I've seen the phrase green shoots being used by some of your colleagues in other investment banks to sort of describe this small rebound that we've seen in economic sentiment, for example, in purchasing manager indices and other sentiment indicators. What do you make of this green shoots narrative? Is it fake news?
I think it's fake news. There are so many indicators out there that that suggest that the economy is going to erode throughout the year. And we can go through a few of them. You know, if you look at the, you know, if you look at the yield curves, for example, you've got the 3-month 10-year, which is at a 35 plus year inverted level. The twos tens curve has been inverted for about 9 or 10 months so far. It's been inverted. It's gone inverted about 10 times over the course of the last 70 years. In 8 of those 10 times, we had a recession within 24 months. It's been 10 months so far. And the other 2 times it happened, a year and 2 years, after that. So that whenever you have a 10-year yield that's 150 basis points below what is likely to be the peak Fed funds rate, that's telling you something, I think, very powerful, because the Fed is not going to cut rates if we have a soft landing, the S&P is at 4,000, and everything is fine in the markets. They're going to cut rates if things are bad. You look at some of the economic data we're seeing. The leading economic indicator has been down 10 months in a row. If you look at the times since 1970, when it's gone negative for more than 2 readings, more than 2 months, there's been a recession every time. And we've now had a number of readings below zero. We last printed negative 7.4%. And if you look at some of the ISM numbers around the new orders relative to inventories, some of the weakest levels, you look at retail sales, it was minus 1% in December, minus 1.1% in this most recent reading from the other day. We haven't had 2 months in a row like that, ex-COVID, since the financial crisis. And there are so many others. And so I think one of the things that is holding up this economy right now is that the unemployment rate's 3.5%. And the consumer at the moment is still strong because they're still employed and they still have some excess savings. But when I look at the forward-looking indicators for the consumer, it's not favorable at all, because excess savings are, they've been coming down for about a year, year and a half in a straight line. They're likely to hit zero sometime in the middle of this year. Credit usage has been surging and the savings rate is at a 70-year low. And so right now, like I said, they're employed. So as soon as employment starts to turn, it doesn't need to turn that much. I think the consumer is really going to start to erode. And that's where you could really see the downside acceleration in the market.
If we turn back time, just say 6 weeks to just before Christmas in the middle of December, we had a terrible December, one of the worst Decembers in history in the US stock market. And everyone seemed to agree that the economy was slowing clearly, that the recession was unavoidable during 2023, et cetera. So what has changed since then, given that we've now seen a rally almost since New Year's?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible the change in the view from the market, where it's gone from, we're almost for sure going to have a recession, to now the most likely outcome being a soft landing. And, I think and as we said earlier, price is certainly, price of equities are certainly a part of that. I think that when you look at the outlook, because the unemployment rate is so low, I think that this process is going to be just that, a process, and it will take time. And we may not get those that think the economy is really going to roll over. You need to be patient, because it's not we're going to fall off a cliff. We don't have a large leverage problem, in the system. And so, it's not like we're going to fall off the cliff right away, but the indicators are all such that I think there's a high likelihood that it is going to happen. But I think the longer that it takes, the more people will start to think that, okay, since it hasn't happened yet, we're going to have the soft landing. Now, I think what's really important is that ultimately this economy goes in cycles, right? It's happened since the beginning of time. And the best barometer of the economy is the unemployment rate. So when the unemployment rate is 3.5%, you're probably towards the top of the cycle. When the unemployment rate is 8, 10, 12%, then that, so almost by definition, is the bottom of the cycle. And you want to own equities towards the bottom of the cycle, and you want to sell equities towards the top of the cycle. And when you look at the returns in history, the data proves that out, meaning that returns go higher as the unemployment rate forward returns go higher as the unemployment rate goes higher. And so as we think about cycles, if in fact we get a soft landing in 2023, which by the way, I think is possible, like, you know, you can't, nothing is 100%, not even close. And I do actually think it is possible, not likely, but possible, then that doesn't mean we're out of the woods. It's not like we've then gone to a 8% unemployment rate and we can start the next cycle. The narrative and the multiple that I think the market will put on earnings will be lower, because if it doesn't happen in 23, people are going to think it's coming in 24, because we are towards the end of the cycle, not the beginning.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of today's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Eric, I wanted to show you a tweet from earlier today. It's from a friend of the show, Jim Bianco, who points out that the S&P 500 has sort of breached a negative trend channel to the upside. I know that you're not a technical analyst. I'm not a technical analyst either. But is it something that worries you when you are bearish, that you see such a break to the upside of a trend channel that we've seen forcefully in place throughout 22?
So I would say that for my 3 to 6 to 9 month view, it has no impact. For, you know, the view, or I should say for the outlook that I would have over the next couple of weeks, yeah, I think that's something to certainly take note of. I think what gives me so much confidence that a breakthrough there is not going to cause, you know, some 5 to 8 or 10% rally, is because the market is already pricing in my view, that soft landing, and that valuations right now, to me, are, and based on the data, very extended. So right now we are trading at about 18 times the earnings estimate for 2023, which is about $223 a share. And so when you think about the alternatives that are out there right now, and we'll take the very simple money market fund yielding 4.5% approximately. So if you're going to hold equities for the next year, the break-even price for where it would make sense to own equities, not taking into account, of course, that equities are much riskier, but the break-even point would be somewhere around 4,200, which is somewhere around 19 times earnings. So if you buy equities today, you have to have the view that you think the multiple is going to go above 19 times earnings. And based on all the data that I've studied throughout my career and that we're studying in the real time, there is no justification for that. We have quantitative tightening going on. We have a Fed funds rate at 5%. We have overall 10-year yield that's well above average. We have real yields that are positive 150 basis points, a 14-year high, and I could go on. There's no justification for it to be above 19 times earnings. And I would point to the last 30 years. There's been two times where the multiple's been higher than 18 times. That was post-COVID when earnings estimates got crushed. So they were trough earnings. Interest rates were zero. QE was $4 trillion and fiscal spending was $3 to $4 trillion in excess. And then the other time was in the late 90s when the internet was literally invented. Outside of that, 18 times has been the peak. And so I feel, that's why I feel so confident that over the next 3 to 6 months, although we could break through that trend level that you were referencing, I don't think we're going to see some large rally from that.
I want to get back to the discussion on how to position for this potential recession in just a second, because I want to play a soundbite for you from a discussion between my colleague Sam Burke and David Rosenberg, a veteran economist who's from time to time rightfully labeled a perma-bear. They discuss how to position for a pending recession. So let's listen to David and get back to that discussion.
Nobody's a perfect market timer. I think that, you know, the way I see it, if you're going to want to turn bullish on equities, and although I have this title or label as the perma bear, I'm dying to turn bullish on stocks. I'll tell you right now, my pledge is that I will be the first one out there with the pom-poms on the sidelines when the time comes. The yield curve has to pivot. The Fed has to pivot the yield curve. That has to happen. So what I'm telling my clients, what I'm telling the viewers here, is that there is not a snowball's chance in hell that the stock market puts in a fundamental low. And all these rallies are bear market rallies. There's not a snowball's chance in hell we hit the lows in the stock market in advance of a big rally in bonds. And this happens every cycle.
The entire interview with David Rosenberg from our Three Idea series is available already today for subscribers on the Real Vision platform. Back to you, Eric. David is crystal clear in his communication here. There is not a snowball's chance in hell that equities will put in a fundamental low until the Fed is able to pivot the yield curve. Do you agree?
I would agree with that. I mean, when you look at the current situation for equities and what you have lying ahead of you, there's a lot to get through. The yield curve is where it is because of the view around the economy. And so I think we have a very sort of treacherous time ahead from an economic perspective. We have a very tough time ahead from a earnings estimates perspective, right? When you want to own stocks, when earnings estimates are rising, you want to own individual stocks when earnings estimates are rising. Owning a stock as the incremental information you're getting is negative has never worked. And I don't expect it to happen this time. And then even though the Fed is, you know, likely going to be, we're going to likely see their last rate hike in the next, you know, 1 to 3 meetings, QT is going to still going to be there. And as we all know, you know, all the charts that people were showing from, you know, 2010 onwards around the correlation between at that time when the Fed was adding to their balance sheet and stock prices was very high. And the degree to which it's going in reverse is of proportions, $1.1 trillion a year. And, you know, so far, I think the market has been somewhat, I think, complacent around that. You know, so far, $550 billion has been drawn down on their balance sheet. However, it's been offset by the Treasury pulling money from their deposits at the Fed to the tune of, you know, $300 to $400 billion, depending on when you know, start looking, and it's down $600 billion from the top. So that's been a significant offset. Those deposits are now below their target rate and can't go below zero. So there's only a certain amount that can be drawn down further. So this is going to be a headwind that even when the Fed does stop hiking, quantitative tightening is going to continue. And so you have all these headwinds in front of you. And if the S&P was trading at, you know, 13, 14 times earnings, then I would argue, okay, maybe, you know, maybe it's all priced in, maybe some of it's priced in. But at 18 times earnings, it's actually the exact opposite, where not only is it not priced in, it's actually pricing in some sort of, you know, market environment, et cetera, that's the exact opposite around what we're currently in and what is ahead of us.
Yeah, and I can add that as long as the US Treasury adds dollars to the financial system, the Fed will essentially have to keep quantitative tightening running for longer, which is something to consider now that the debt ceiling is back in force. Eric, I want to talk about earnings. You briefly mentioned earnings yields in relation to the yield on money market funds. And if we look at the current earnings season, I would argue that it's not that bad yet. So what's your take on what we've seen so far from the earnings season? I think Microsoft is reporting right as we speak here. Have you been surprised to the upside, and what's the outlook for the next quarter or two?
Yeah, so I think that so far, you know, as you noted, earnings have been, I would say, mixed to fine. You know, the barometer that I look at is, you know, where are forward estimates moving post the earnings reports, and they've trickled lower. We started January at around $226 for 2023. Right now we're about $223.40. So they've only come down a small amount. You know, my outlook, we still have, you know, the next week and a half, we're going to get most of the S&P reporting in terms of capitalization. And I do expect those numbers to continue to come down. And I don't think it's going to be a friendly earnings season. Now, one of the things that companies are able to do is to cut expenses, benefit from the falling dollar. And so it's not going to be a cliff for their earnings. I think it's going to be a drag that is going to play out over a number of quarters. And we're going to look up at the middle of this year, and instead of the earnings for this year being 223.50, they're going to be, you know, 208, 210, 206, something like that. But it just may happen over the course of 6 months. And I think that the expense cutting is something that clearly is going on and is going to buffer, which it typically does, that initial drop in unit sales. And we saw this during prior recessions where, you know, I point to, you know, the year 2000, where estimates really didn't fall until we were, you know, really into 2001. And the market was hitting a high in September of 2000. And same thing with 07. Estimates really didn't get hit until 2008. And the market was hitting a high in October of 07. So these, you know, we're all looking at the markets every single day, and every day feels like a lifetime. But if we take a step back, you know, we have to realize that these things, they do take time.
Mm. Eric, if we look at the positioning across sectors heading into 2023, I noted how, for example, Bank of America's monthly investor survey showed that most investors had overweight positions in defensive sectors such as utilities, healthcare, and consumer staples. And I also noted how such three sectors traded at pretty rich levels from a PE perspective heading into this year. So what do you make of defensive sectors, which, by the way, are rock bottom on the leaderboard so far this year, from a pricing and valuation perspective into such a recessionary scenario?
So the defensive sectors are tough, and they're tough for a couple of reasons. As you noted, that they've been crowded, people playing the recession trade. And as you noted, part of that reason, as a result of that, have really underperformed this year as the narrative around a soft landing starts to take hold, and cyclical stocks have done very well. And so money has come out of some of the mega caps at the end of last year, have come out of defensives this year, and have gone into cyclicals. The reason why they're tricky is because, you know, they typically benefit from their dividend yield. And right now, though, their dividend yield just looks very small relative to the money market yields that are currently out there. And this is a dynamic that is really new, meaning that money markets have been yielding, you know, somewhere around zero for a good part of the last 15 years. So, you know, that makes them tricky. What also makes them tricky is that with inflation falling, it's not all positive. Clearly, it helps the Fed outlook, but the earnings outlook becomes challenging because your wages stay sticky, your fixed costs stay sticky, and you have challenges then on the revenue side. And companies, including consumer staples, have benefited from inflation, where in prices of their goods have been rising faster than their cost structure, and they've been able to take those margins. Well, now those are going to be going into reverse. They have competition on the dividend to rate front. And as you noted, they still remain somewhat of a crowded long. So the outlook there is pretty, I would say, challenging.
We're going to take another quick break and be right back with more of today's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, and I can add that we received the news today that Walmart plans on increasing the wage for the average worker at Walmart. Anecdotal evidence that you're right, that the wage component will be sticky in companies such as Walmart in the consumer staple basket, even though prices have started to at least fade from a momentum perspective in the U.S. Eric, if we look at the other end of the leaderboard so far this year, we have cyclicals, as you rightly point to, but also consumer discretionary and tech stocks are high on the leaderboard, right? Even Tesla is back in fashion, at least very short term here. So what do you make of the positioning in the stocks that were so much in fashion through 2020 and 2021, such as tech stocks?
Yeah, so tech stocks really have moved quickly at the end of last year. There was a big liquidation that was going on. And so it really reduced a lot of that exposure. And a lot of that money has gone into cyclicals, which has caused industrials, financials, materials to really outperform sharply over the past few months. And so you've had the tailwind from a view that the China reopening is going to help those cyclical sectors. And then you had the money flows out of defensives and out of, and then this view that we could have a soft landing. I think one of the great trades out there is to take the other side of this cyclical rally. And I think it's going to play out over the course of the next, 6 to 9 months, where if we're heading into what I think is the likely scenario of at best a zero-ish growth economy for the next year or two, and then of course at worst something far worse than that, the last thing you're going to want to own are cyclicals. And the fact that right now they are close to local highs relative to the market, at the same time the yield curve is doing what it's doing, and some of the data points that we're getting around the economy, to me, that's one of the great trades that lies in front of us. And I would just say also that one of the beneficiaries of that is that investors could really embrace secular growth. And as people are looking for growth in a very difficult economic outlook, they could benefit And a lot of those names have now been somewhat washed out from this, you know, trade, this popping of the bubble. And I think that when you think about the difficulties with defensive sectors that we described, difficulties with the cyclical sectors, secular growth could actually be a, and I think probably will be an outperformer.
Eric, we haven't touched upon the energy sector yet. It was more or less the darling of 2022 for many investors. And it was right about the only performing sector through the turbulence of 2022. So far this year, it's been flatlining, basically. I think it's up 1% or so since New Year's. What do you make of that sector in the context of this growth discussion for the next quarters?
So with energy, I don't really have a strong view there. I think that there is there's a push-pull dynamic. I think on the one hand, based on where, you know, commodity prices currently are, energy stocks for the most part are cheap, and they are printing a lot of cash. They've been very disciplined, and are disciplined around capital spending. And so when you look at them as actual, you know, fundamental vehicles, they still look attractive. The issue is that, you know, what's the outlook for the commodity? And the positives are remain a supply issue. And I think that will remain. There's a tailwind from the SPR that is a buyer at some level. On the other hand, if the economy does what I think it's going to do, that's going to be a significant offset to those potential supply issues or demand from the ultimate demand from the SPR. So I think it's really a tough picture. And I don't really have a strong view there.
Absolutely fair. Let's go to a couple of questions from our great members of Real Vision. We have a question from a loyal member, Paul, asking you about a viewpoint from Julian Brigden. He said on one of our shows that he expects the US to underperform Europe and emerging markets over the coming period as a consequence of a weaker dollar, but also as a consequence of weaker tech stocks. What do you make of that in the context of a recession?
So the issue, so I would agree with that. However, I think the entry point on that trade is not great, meaning that, you know, the US has underperformed by a lot over the course of the last few months. As, you know, the dollar's gotten hit, Europe has, looks like they're gonna escape, you know, the issues this winter around energy. And, you know, people are looking at the valuation discrepancy. So my issue with it is that a lot has already been priced in. And so I think that, I guess my view would be that I like that trade broadly. I'm not sure that from a tactical perspective, that now is the entry point. I think you're going to get a better entry point for that trade.
I would tend to agree with that. Also given how aggressive a rally that we've seen in my part of the world, in Europe, so far this year. And I can guarantee you that we are not out of the woods yet. At least I need some more confirmation Sure. before I dare say so Sure. on the show. Eric, always a great pleasure to host you. You're just a wealth of knowledge around equity sectors and current pricing. If I am to sum up today's discussion, essentially the rally that we've seen so far this year is a consequence of a very stretched positioning heading into the year. And we just needed that little one trigger from China to get things going. But as of now, the risk reward has clearly turned again. The risk is on the downside for equities over the next 6 to 9 months. The yield curve essentially tells you to be on the watch for such a scenario. And if you were to pick one sector or one part of the equity market to watch out for the most, it would be cyclicals. Anything to add to that summary, Eric?
I think it's a great summary, and I enjoyed being here.
Good stuff, Eric. Thank you so much for joining us on Real Vision Daily Briefing. Before we leave you out there, we have the meme of the day, and it's giraffe eating a couple of green shoots, asking whether that was all. Seriously, guys, was that all? Potentially it was, at least if we listen to Eric Johnston from Cantor Fitzgerald. A great pleasure to host you, Eric, and my colleagues will be back with more tomorrow at the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.